Lycan cast a sideways glance at Flycatcher. He sat rigid, his eyes on Wanderer. He had twined a hand in one sleeve of her dress, grasping it tightly lest she try to get too far away from him.
I heard a voice calling me, Wanderer. I followed it through a dark mist where fireflies flashed all around me, until I saw wooden stairs built into the side of a huge mound. When the mist cleared, I walked up the steps into this big round room. Seashells lined every wall. It was beautiful. Fire bowls streamed out around a raised platform like sunbeams.
Ah, the sun chamber at the temple mound in Cahokia.
You've been there?
Only the greatest holy people were ever allowed to enter that forbidden space.
Oh, yes. Many cycles ago, when I was teaching Nightshade. That was before Theron cast her out of Cahokia, of course. It's a magnificent place.
He shoved a large piece of oak into the fire and prodded the kindling until the flames leaped beneath the pot.
I wonder what the Cahokians want with you. Theron, the Sun Chief, is not a good person to be wanted by. Many people call him a sorcerer.
I've heard my grandmother speak of him. Didn't he burn up Hickory Mounds this winter?
Yes. Great wickedness walks with him.
Wanderer reached into a blue and red basket, pulled out a handful of leaves, and dropped them into the boiling pot. Steam rose in a glittering veil around his face. Flycatcher sat up straighter to sniff the flowery fragrance that filled the room.
What's that strange smell?
My own tea mixture. It's made from mint, elderberries, and prickly pear blossoms.
What does it do to a person?
Do? Why, it clears the head and takes the soul up to...
Wanderer stopped abruptly to scowl at a fly buzzing around the ceiling, and Flycatcher quit breathing. To make matters worse, the raven on the windowsill took wing. Flycatcher rose to his knees, clearly ready to bolt.
Up where?
Wanderer snatched at the fly and missed.
Up where? Where what?
You said that your tea takes the soul up somewhere. I want to know where.
You're an inquisitive little reptile, aren't you? Did you know that a person's entire future can be read in the wrinkles of dried elderberries? I've spent the past 40 cycles making collections for nearly everyone in Redweed Village, barring the youngest babies, of course. I couldn't know about them. Here, let me see if I can find yours. If I recall correctly, it's,
He grabbed a basket and proceeded to ransack it, sending black, shriveled berries jumping like popcorn.
Great mouse! I hope I didn't throw any of those berries into my tea.
Wanderer, we were talking about my dream, about the Sun Chamber.
He studied Lycan as though he hadn't the vaguest notion of what she was talking about.
Were we?
Yes!
Well, what was I saying? Oh, wait, I remember.
He threw the basket down, heedless of the fact that about 20 berries bounced out onto the hard-packed surface. Flycatcher looked appalled, as if half of his life had just rolled into the crevices in the floor.
That's right. We were talking about Theron. His madness started with Nightshade. Yes, Nightshade.
Who?
Wanderer made a delicate gesture, the way he would push aside a cobweb.
20 or so cycles ago, the great priest, Old Marmot, had a dream that the reason Mother Earth had turned against the Cahokians and the corn wouldn't grow anymore was that the people needed to go south and west into the forbidden land of the palace builders to steal a little girl and a power bundle. The great warrior Badger Tail led that battle walk, but Old Marmot got more than he bargained for in Nightshade. By the time she'd turned 10, she had more power than Marmot had ever dreamed of. Gizis, Theron's father, had hired certain artisans to produce his famous well pots. Those are the black ones Theron trades to special leaders. But when Nightshade got hold of the pots, she started breathing terrible power into them. Gizis forced her to teach all of the other priests and priestesses how to do it too, of course. But Old Marmot hated it.
She breathed power into them? Power to do what?
Why, power to swim to the underworld. Everyone has his own method of getting there, and the well pod is Nightshade's method. Anyway, Theron went mad when he sneaked into Nightshade's chamber one night and dared to gaze into her well pot. He said his heart started jumping around in his chest so badly that he almost died. He claimed that a pink-faced spirit had tried to devour his soul.
Flycatcher hunched forward slowly, looking like a vulture spying on a dying rabbit.
Nightshade breathed evil spirits into those pots?
Wanderer matched Flycatcher's expression and posture, staring back at the boy.
What would make you think that?
Well, you just said...
Come here.
Ow, 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 ow!
When Flycatcher flung himself back against the wall, Wanderer crawled across the floor, grabbed Flycatcher's recalcitrant head, and started rapping on the top of it with his knuckles, as though sounding it out.
No, too bad.
He promptly duck-walked back to study the boiling pot.
What? Too bad what?
Oh, it's just that humans are born with a soft spot in the top of their heads through which they can communicate with Earthmaker. In most people, the spot closes up when they're very young and reopens only at death to let the soul depart to the land of the ancestors. But a person can learn to keep it open if he tries. I thought maybe you'd been getting messages from the spirits about Nightshade. Turns out you were just guessing. But you know, I do brain operations. I could fix that for you.
Flycatcher sat rigid with terror as Wanderer took a wooden cup and dipped it into the pot, smelled the aroma appreciatively, then handed it to Flycatcher, who vehemently shook his head, then to Lycan, who took the cup gratefully. She'd had the tea before and knew how sweet it tasted. Nothing had ever happened to her soul because of it. Wanderer dipped some of the brew for himself and lounged back on his blankets.
Tell me more about this dream, Lycan. Did you see people?
Yes, a little girl about my age. She was wearing a painted mask with black and white squares on it. But I knew she was crying, even though I couldn't see her face.
Was she the one who called out to you and led you to the Sun Chamber?
I think so.
Why was she crying?
I'm not sure, but I felt something horrible. A group of old gray-haired shamans were hunched on the floor around her.
Priests. At Cahokia, they call them priests and priestesses. So what were the priests doing?
Singing. And I saw this huge blackness rise over the temple on the tallest mound. It hovered for a little while, then flew north, like the smoke of a forest fire pushed by the wind.
Wanderer set his cup on the floor.
The blackness flew north?
Lycan nodded. Wanderer shot to his feet and turned first one way and then another.
No. No, it doesn't necessarily mean they're coming for us. But if they are, we better...
Flycatcher cupped a hand to Lycan's ear.
He's as crazy as a rabid skunk. I'm getting out of here. Are you coming?
Just a little longer.
Wanderer moved erratically around the room, touching the colorful spirit symbols on the walls and swatting at the fly that buzzed around his ears. After a few moments, he stopped and his eyes cleared. His madness disappeared, replaced by a seriousness that frightened Lycan. When he turned to gaze at her, a prickle climbed her spine.
What is it, Wanderer? What are you thinking?
Thinking? Oh, I wasn't thinking at all. Except, well, last week Crossbeak brought me news about a series of murders at Cahokia. All of the priests and priestesses who could breathe life into the well pots were killed, except for Nightshade. I was just wondering about the murders. Why the little girl in your dream is crying.
Do you think they're connected? Maybe somebody's killing people who can breathe life into the pot, and the little girl is sad because somebody she loved was murdered.
I pray not. Nightshade lives at River Mounds now. I don't know what she'd do if someone had the boldness to make an attempt on her life. She might just rip the world asunder in rage.
So why would the little girl be calling me, Wanderer? How could I help her?
Why, I haven't the slightest notion. Now, where was I? Oh, I was looking for that bowl of berries I collected on Flycatcher's life. Where could I have put it?
Flycatcher pinched Lycan's arm.
I'm getting out of here before he can find it.
I guess we should be going, Wanderer. We have to be home before sundown.
Lycan finished her tea in three long gulps and handed her cup to him.
Thank you for the tea and for talking to me about my dream.
Flycatcher scrambled across the floor, crawling madly for the doorway. He was out into the sunlight before Lycan even got to her feet. Lycan walked over to Wanderer and patted his arm. He grinned. In the wavering amber glow of the fire, his face seemed older, more wrinkled and gaunt, but the twinkle had returned to his eyes.
You take care of yourself, Wanderer. I missed you this winter.
Oh, I've been fine, really. I'm just a little disturbed about this weasel that's trying to take over my soul, but I guess if First Woman set on it, there's nothing I can do to stop it. Lycan, about your dream. I want you to talk about it with the Stone Wolf. Maybe it can help. The darkness moving north worries me.
But Mother doesn't like me to get near the wolf, Wanderer, and it's never called out to me before. What makes you think...
Power has taken to the wind again. The wolf will know that. There's no saying who or what it's trying to corner. Maybe you, my only friend.
He rapped the top of her head, listened speculatively, then smiled approvingly.
You'd better go. Flycatcher's probably to the cornfields by now.
Yes, I'll bet he is. Thank you again. I'll try to come back soon.
Good. I've missed our talks.
She ducked out the doorway and into the slanting rays of afternoon sunlight, shielding her eyes to see if she could spot Flycatcher. A flock of ravens soared over the trail in the distance, and beneath it, curls of dust sprouted. Lycan picked up her feet and began running with all her might, flying over the wet limestone, trying to catch up with Flycatcher before he could hurt himself again. More than 100 war canoes sliced through the pre-dawn mist that rose in ghostly streamers from Marsh Elder Lake. Curving prows cut acute chevrons into the glassy water as they slipped silently forward, phantoms in the wavering haze. The red and blue animal figures painted on the hulls of the slim dugouts gleamed as darkly as old blood in the dim light. Paddles flashed, powered by muscular arms, sending the craft onward. The tattooed faces of the warriors displayed a variety of emotions. Unease on some, here and there, anticipation, grim purpose, or fear, and finally, the thin-lipped tension of distaste. Night still cloaked the water, but a faint slate-blue glow shone on the eastern horizon. The great warrior, Badgertail, crouched in the bow of the lead war canoe, feeling ill, shivering. His heavy brows lowered as he squinted into the chilly mist, vainly attempting to penetrate its twisting veil. Defeated, he raised his gaze to the purpling sky. Grandmother Morningstar hung above. Her bright countenance tarnished the land with a silver sheen. A few of the Star Ogre's constellations huddled around her. Faint outlines betrayed their identities. Hanged Woman, Wolf Pup, and Great Deer. But most of the ogres had retreated to their caves in the underworld to catch some sleep before Father Sun ordered them to rise again and light the evening skies.
I hate this, Badgertail. I wish we could run away.
You're young. Battle is as much a part of life as eating or breathing.
And you, my brother, are getting old and blind. This is not battle. It's slaughter. The Sun Chief has truly gone mad this time.
Farron frightens me too about that, but I don't think he's mad. I'm inclined to believe he's a boy in a man's body. Petulant. He's
my age. 28 summers. How can you call him a boy?
He may be 28, but he's been locked inside the palisades of Cahokia for nearly his entire life. How would you feel if you've never been able to dip your fingers into the creek 100 hands behind your house? He knows nothing about the outside world. He's as much a prisoner of the Sun as the Star Ogres are.
That may be. But if he doesn't learn about the outside world, his idiocy is going to destroy our people. And Blessed Moon Maiden knows he'll never be able to marry again. Who would have him? If he can't marry, Cahokia will be cut off from the world.
I know.
He's so hated by the other Sunborn that I don't see how his clan elders can ever approach the others about an alliance through one of their daughters. And you, my dear brother, don't help him any. You're always coddling Theron's weaknesses, bringing him little gifts from every battle walk.
We need the chief on our side. Theron will not last forever, but neither will the chiefdom, unless we are allowed to.
We can all pray that Theron will not last forever. The sooner he goes, the better.
Badger Tail swiveled his head. Bobcat met his gaze briefly before looking away in shame. Though Bobcat had turned 28 two moons ago, he looked much older than that. Lines had etched at the corners of his dark eyes, giving his handsome oval face an air of seriousness. Unlike Badger Tail, whose toad-like, bemused face tended to make people think he was smirking at them when he wasn't. Both he and Bobcat had woven shell beads into their braided forelocks. The remainder of their skulls had been shaved, except for a bristly ridge down the center. Copper ear spools the size of large nuts filled their distended earlobes, the sign of wealth and status. Tattoos adorned their bodies. Badger Tail had blue spiders on his cheeks. Black and blue mazes covered his chest, arms, and legs. He wore a fabric war shirt dyed in brilliant colors by the master weavers of Cahokia. Heavy shell-beaded necklaces hung at his throat, the insignia of his hard-earned rank. Red concentric squares blanketed Bobcat's forehead. His war shirt bore his personal power symbol, the red image of a snarling wolf. Barely visible under the fine fabric lay his conch shell gorget with its interlaced woodpecker heads, the badge of the Woodpecker Warrior Clan. Badger Tail's hand drifted to his own chest to lightly caress the green image of a falcon that overlay his shell gorget. His fingertips tingled from the power there.
I cannot disobey my orders, Bobcat. What would you have me do? Help destroy our way of life and bring the wrath of the Sun Chief down on all of us?
No, brother. I would have you grab your pack and run away with me after this battle walk. Moonseed will agree. She's an obedient wife to me. We could do it, Badger Tail. We could run away. Then neither of us would have to obey his foolish orders ever again.
And where would we go?
Anywhere. It doesn't matter.
Is that how Karen's legacy will end?
Badger Tail's muscular hands tightened on the carved wood of his oar. Karen, Theron's legendary grandfather, had welded the small chiefdoms together through a cunning campaign of diplomacy, trade, marriage, and of course, the Woodpecker Clan, the elite warriors born of Commoner and Sunborn, men like Badger Tail and Bobcat. Karan had overcome the jealousies and established Cahokia as the major center of power, dominating not only the Father Water, but the Mother Water and the Moon Water rivers. In most cases, Karan had been able to cajole, threaten, bribe, or wheedle the other mound centers into his alliance. But when that failed, his warriors, led by the Woodpecker Clan, had forced the recalcitrant chieftains into compliance, and often into forced marriages to create kinship bonds with their important obligations. For two generations, the Sunborn had ruled the chiefdoms, each marrying its young men off to the other mound centers, strengthening the ties of clan and family. And for two generations, the heavy canoes of the traders had plied the waters from one end of the land to the other, bearing a variety of wealth. Conch shell and shark's teeth from the sea to the south, buffalo hides from the plains far to the west, and obsidian from the mountains beyond them. Traders even brought olivella shells from the southeastern seas. Corn traveled back and forth on heavily laden canoes when harvests failed. Red pipestone and steatite soapstone traveled down from the conifer forests, and copper from the western shores of the Great Lakes in the north. Similarly, mica was brought from the southern tributaries of the Moonwater, as were fluorspar, barite, and salt. From the far reaches of the Moonwater came granite, gneiss, and schist, to be ground into maul heads, celts, maces, and axe heads. From the west, beyond Pretty Mounds, came ochre, hematite, and galena. From the mountains, a moon's journey to the southwest, came large quartz crystals. In return, the artisans of Cahokia worked the raw materials, creating stunning shell beads, nets, fabrics from basswood and cottonwood bark. From weed stems, they created silky, soft textiles, dyeing them in colors as brilliant as the rainbow itself. Effigy pipes and delicate ceramics were produced to repay the surrounding chiefdoms with luxury and status goods.
So much has been gained from Karen's vision. Is it all to come to an end now? Can I run away? Desert great Karen's grandson in this terrible time?
We pray for victory, Thunderbird.
Give us victory, victory, victory. Give us victory, victory, victory.
Let us die and be reborn at will, as lightning is. Against the darkness we are falling.
We are falling, falling, falling. We are falling, falling, falling.
Let us drive our arrows deep into our enemy's heart. Give us victory, Thunderbird.
Give us victory, victory, victory. Give us victory, victory, victory. Give us victory, victory, victory.
Victory? Over what? Over whom?
Ahead, still out of sight, lay the thatched houses in the village of River Mounds. People there would be waking, cooking meals, saying prayers to the rising face of Father Sun.
Bobcat is right. How can you do this when you know it's wrong? These are not enemies. What has happened that we've come to attacking our own people?
Badgertail and Bobcat had relatives in River Mounds, members of their Squash Blossom clan, perhaps even a niece or nephew. Their great-grandmother had been born in River Mounds. He turned to glance at those who rode behind him and caught Locust's stare on him, hard, unforgiving. 34 summers old, she had a face like a field mouse, narrow and pointed, with black, glistening eyes. She had cut her black hair so that it brushed the shoulders of her war shirt. They had grown up together, witnessed their families killed, their homes ravaged, in the last days before Karan's vision of peace had been fulfilled. Locust knew Badgertail better than he himself did. Long ago, when they'd both been young and rash, he had wanted to marry her. Probably he still did somewhere deep inside, although it had been 22 long cycles since that day. They were cousins, each of the Squash Blossom clan, and such a marriage was taboo, forbidden. Since then, Locust had taken a wife, as was customary for a warrior of her status. To have taken a husband would have demeaned her and forced her into the traditional role of a woman, that of cooking, cleaning, and bearing children. As in all things, the clan ruled. Just as they made decisions about what to plant and who would tend the fields, so did the old women decide when a man should marry. Noticing Badgertail's attraction to his cousin, his grandmother had taken matters into her own hands. He had been forced to marry a woman of the Deerbone Rattle clan named Two Tassels. His marriage had been arranged by his grandmother and great aunt, each powerful in clan politics at the time. The memory prickled in Badgertail's thoughts the way a wild rose scratched the skin. Accompanied by some of his kin, he had ridden one of the bulky trade canoes down to the mouth of the Moonwater, then pitched in, rowing the heavy cottonwood canoe for 2 weeks upriver to Flying Woman Mounds, the bride price stacked behind him. He could still picture Two Tassels' face, sullen, distrustful, annoyed at having to marry an ugly warrior like him when her heart yearned for another. Nevertheless, Badgertail had fulfilled his duties. He had labored for a season in her fields, lived in her house, and cared for her young son. And then he left. He dug deeply with his painted oar, driving the war canoe forward. The dull, traditional life at Flying Woman Mounds was not for him, not after the excitement of bustling Cahokia. A year after he'd returned, word had come through a young man of the Deerbone Rattle clan that Badgertail was divorced. But to maintain the kinship relations so important to the clans, the young man would adopt Badger Tail as his brother. Everyone had ended up content, but Badger Tail had never quite accepted Locust's marriage. Oh, it comforted him that she was happy, but she'd taken a Berdash wife, a woman in a man's body. Physically, Primrose was a man, but his soul was female, and therefore he wore his hair long and braided, like a woman, and adopted female dress, going about in a skirt. Primrose cared for Locust's house, tended the fields with the other women, and served as her lover. Though in the 15 cycles that Locust and Primrose had been married, Primrose had planted no children in Locust's womb.
Perhaps when a man has a female soul, he has no semen. Who knows?
Badgertail had almost overcome his attraction to Locust. The old fire returned to haunt him only on rare occasions now. Sometimes, when they had the leisure to lounge around the camp, laughing and talking, he fell in love with her all over again, though he rarely admitted it to himself. She loved Primrose, and Badgertail would not disturb her happiness by intruding his own selfish desires. Despite his hidden longing, over the years, Locust had become his best friend. Being close to her soothed something deep inside him. Badgertail dipped his paddle to keep the canoe skimming close to the bank. Glistening curls of black water trailed in the wake of his stroke.
And Nightshade will stand by and watch us destroy her home. And later, she'll follow Theron's orders and return to Cahokia with us.
If Nightshade knew of their plans, she would have told Hailcloud, Genos's cunning and dangerous war leader. Once, in a kinder day, Hailcloud had saved Badgertail from a terrible defeat. They had shared the rigors of the battle walk, and a friendship based on mutual respect had flowered. That, too, would die on this day. Badgertail grimaced at the fading Star Ogres, Hanged Woman's face dimmed with each moment, like his sense of self-respect.
How many villages have we attacked in the past cycle?
The killing and kidnapping sickened his soul, though he knew the reasons for them. The tribute system served as the sinew that bound their society. But it had been established hundreds of cycles ago, before drought and famine had stricken the land. In the old days, when First Woman guided them, villages could afford to contribute half of their corn and squash crops to sustain the trade and redistribution programs administered by Cahokia's Sun Chief. But not in these hard times.
How can Theron expect the lesser villages to keep giving the same amount they always have? They get nothing back because Theron needs the crops to feed 10,000 at Cahokia. First Woman has truly turned her face from us.
Badgertail had stood on the shooting platforms of the palisade during the dark days when Winterboy breathed snow over the land and thousands came to slam their food bowls against the walls, begging for corn to feed their children.
Tribute. How can Theron keep calling it that?
That's what it's always been called.
Yes, and in the days when the Sun Chief's power protected the people, it had a meaning. But now, it's become a bribe. A ransom paid to stave off our attacks, brother. Have you forgotten the days when we defended our sister villages from outsiders? Have you? Karen's dream is dead. They are no longer our sisters, and we are snakes.
Badgertail caught sight of dark wings flapping over the water. For a moment, his soul ached at the owl's freedom. He wanted to escape, but the chiefdom needed him. Thousands of people depended upon his ability to maintain order.
Anyway, where could I go?
He toyed with his paddle, rowing half-heartedly. He had sat around 100 campfires telling stories about his experiences far to the southwest in the Forbidden Land, where people grew corn on the bluffs and lived in stone palaces. He had even heard Nightshade herself spin legends about the gods who roamed the cactus and sage-covered deserts there. Sometimes, in his dreams, he lived there with them, as free as the eagles who soared over the red buttes.
Nightshade. Brave men lower their voices when they speak her name. And once I carried her over my shoulder, while our paths always threaded together like a weaver's pattern in a fabric. I'm far more worried about Theron's obsession with power objects than I am about tribute, Bobcat. What does he think he's doing by stealing every power bundle and coveting every ear spool that's ever been proclaimed to have power? It doesn't make any sense.
It does to me. He's trying to gather all the power in the world to himself.
But why? Does he feel threatened if such objects belong to the shamans or the priests? What does he want with such a wealth of power?
Who knows? Maybe he's trying to learn to dive into the underworld himself.
Badger Tail suppressed a shudder. Four times a cycle, the Starborn, priests and priestesses of the highest order, filled their black well pots with sacred water and dove into the well of the ancestors, swimming through the layers of illusion woven by First Woman to prevent the unworthy from finding the pitch-black cave of the tree where she dwelt. First Woman knew the magical songs to keep Father Sun and Mother Earth happy in their marriage. Without those songs, Mother Earth would grow lonely, and in her despair, the crops would wither. The chiefdom had been suffering under the brunt of Mother Earth's discontent for cycles. The large game had almost completely disappeared. He had been 5 summers when he had last seen an elk, though the legends told of a time when millions of them had dotted the prairies. Badger Tail had heard Old Marmot say that it was Nightshade's fault, that she'd begun to breathe death into the pots, not life. Marmot had claimed that Nightshade had blocked the entry to the underworld through witchery, and he had admitted that he could no longer pierce the layers of illusion in the underworld to find First Woman.
Perhaps Bobcat's suggestion isn't so far-fetched, and Theron wants to try it himself.
Someone needed to do something, and fast. Oak and Hickory had almost vanished from the uplands. In spring, the rivers and creeks flooded and drowned the crops, stunting their growth. The cornfields yielded barely enough to feed the thousands of hungry mouths. Old Marmot had declared that Mother Earth had fallen into despair.
Do you think Gino suspects that Theron has sent 1,000 warriors to encourage him to turn over the tribute he claims he does not have?
If Nightshade knows, Gino knows.
Bobcat froze, his oar lifted half out of the water.
You mean you think that she's foreseen our coming? That she knows we've orders to drag her back to Cahokia with us? If you really believe that, turn these canoes around and let's go home.
We can't be sure. Since Marmot died, we've no priest strong enough to send his soul swimming to see what she's up to. We'll know soon enough.
Yes, when Hail Cloud sends arrows flying over the palisade walls to land in our bodies.
I know that, brother.
The warriors had begun to stare. Bobcat noted their gazes and shook his head before stabbing his paddle back into the quiet water. Badger Tail's eyes barely brushed locusts, and then he focused on the horizon. A dusty lavender glow washed the heavens and spilled over onto the land, flooding the beach ahead.
There. Put in there.
Up and down the shore, canoes landed, and warriors armed themselves, slinging brightly painted quivers over their shoulders. Without a word, they ghosted away into the dawn to surround the village, as Badger Tail had planned. He watched Woodchuck's warriors disperse, noting their positions and numbers, then bent to pick up his own weapons. His quiver felt heavy, pressing down on his shoulders as though already soaked with his relative's blood. He hooked his bow on his waist thong.
Do not fight me, Genus. No matter how good Hellcloud is, I'll win, and you know it. Give me a way out of this lunacy.
Locust trotted up to him, her body taut as she searched his eyes. Badger Tail gestured toward the mounds.
Bobcat and I will go alone. I want you and your men to wait here and watch for my signal. You know the plan.
I do. I'll be watching.
She waved an arm to her war party, and they followed her into the brooding shadows. Badger Tail grimaced at the east before forcing his reluctant feet up the slope toward the village. As he walked, frost from the dry grass dusted his wet-hide boots. He had 2 fingers of time before Father Sun slipped over the horizon. It would have to be enough. The Sun Chief's orders had been explicit. He wanted Badger Tail and his flotilla back at Cahokia by tomorrow, with the demanded tribute. Bobcat trudged at his side, wearing an expression of disgust like a badge of honor. Their fringed boots sank into moist sand as they crested the slope and strode out into the open expanse of winter tan grass. Badger Tail's skin prickled, vulnerable throughout the long walk to the palisade. The main gate made a dark square in the wall, defiant and dangerous. Badger Tail extended his hands, palms up, in front of him, letting Genos know that he had come to talk for one last time. The palisade consisted of upright poles that rose 20 hands high around the central section of the village. The wall had been thickly plastered with clay and baked as a protection against fire, insects, and rot. Badger Tail knew that away from the lake, on the western side of River Mounds, the common born fended for themselves, unprotected by either palisades or professional warriors, though every male would be armed with a club and bow. He hoped they had witnessed his approach and fled into the hills. Bobcat indicated with a tilt of his head the shooting platforms that had been erected along the length of the palisades.
They're up there. I see them.
Faces glowed, the pale blue of flesh just visible over the sharpened ends of the poles. Four warriors occupied each platform. That would make nearly 600 in all. More would be huddling inside, using the 45 mounds in the village as cover. Badger Tail anticipated around 800 armed opponents, desperate men and women who must win this battle if they were to feed their families through the rest of the winter. He halted.
Leader Badger Tail wishes to speak with the great Moon Chief. Will he open his arms to embrace his relatives this day?
Will my father's obscure cousin order his warriors to lay down their bows until we have finished speaking?
That old bear bait.
Badger Tail smiled grimly at the insult. The people of the mounds traced kinship through the females. A man belonged to his mother's clan, disciplined his sister's children. When he married, he went to live in his wife's house and work her clan's fields. He had no say in his wife's household and could not speak to his mother-in-law, but must avoid her at all costs, not even meeting her eyes. The warrior clans consisted of men and women born through the mating of the Sunborn with the Commonborn. Such mating had taken place when Badger Tail's mother coupled with his Sunborn father. Genos had just insinuated that no one believed the claim of Badger Tail's mother, and this, if true, would have stripped Badger Tail of his warrior's status and privileges.
Your obscure cousin will, for one hand's worth of time, Genos. No more. If you will guarantee my party's safety for the same length of time.
I will.
Badger Tail turned cautiously and signaled Locust to obey. Badger Tail touched Bobcat's shoulder reassuringly and faced the gate. The gate slid back to reveal three lines of warriors, kneeling, bows drawn. Badger Tail and Bobcat extended open hands before them and stalked boldly forward. Four men and one woman fell out of the first line, surrounding them and forcing them down a narrow pathway that wound through the village. Badger Tail noted that Genos took another trail.
A trap? Or perhaps Genos needs to get to the rendezvous point to... to what?
Grass-mantled mounds rose darkly against the pastel glow of dawn. Each mound had been crowned with a plastered wall, and beyond that, thatched roofs rose sharp against the dawn. The proud houses of the elite clans. Badger Tail wondered how many of them would remain standing when night settled on the wounded land. His people constructed three kinds of mounds. Platform mounds, which rose like truncated pyramids and supported prestigious buildings, such as temples and the houses of the elite, conical mounds, where the most important leaders were buried, and ridgetop mounds, which served as markers for the village boundaries. The guards led them past the mud-plastered houses of the craftsmen and across the central plaza with its tall poles, the top of each carved into a clan totem. People garbed in brightly dyed fabrics watched anxiously from the peripheries as they crossed the chunky court. Last summer, no more than 9 moons past, he had played on this very clay. wagering his skill and some of Theron's finest goods in competition with Genos' champion, Mallow.
How has the world gone so wrong?
Before them rose the tallest mound in the village, the Temple Mound. Squared steps of red cedar had been placed in the steep ramp, and Badgertail ascended. By the time he had made it halfway to the top, he could see the temple. It spread 200 hands long and 50 hands wide. The peaked roof jutted 50 hands high. He and Bobcat passed through the final gate in the wall that guarded the truncated top of the mound and crossed the flat past the effigy pole that rose the height of 10 tall men. Mallow waited for them, standing before two brawny men who stood on either side of the main door of the huge temple building. Each man was dressed in the flashy robes of temple guards. Thin triangles of pounded copper covered the arms and chests of their red garments. Hardwood clubs hung from their belts. Recognition glimmered in Mallow's obsidian gaze. Mallow dropped his lance across Badgertail's path. The barest odor of smoke from the sacred fires inside escaped on the morning breeze.
Stop, war leader of Cahokia. I've been instructed to tell you to remove your weapons.
Why? Leader Badgertail swore no bows would be raised until he'd finished speaking with the Moon Chief. Does Genos doubt his word?
You may ask him yourself once you've removed all of your weapons.
You want us to go inside your temple, out of sight of our forces, unarmed?
Do as he says. I trust the Moon Chief, and I trust Mallow. He is a man of courage and honor.
But Badgertail, we can't.
Do it. Now.
Bobcat grudgingly unslung his quiver and bow and kissed them before placing them gently on the bosom of Mother Earth. Badgertail put his weapons beside Bobcat's and took a step backward, dragging his brother with him.
That's all of our weapons.
Mallow scrutinized them suspiciously.
You brought no knife?
Don't insult my brother. If he says that's all, it is.
Badgertail gripped Bobcat's shoulder and tugged him back reproachfully.
We brought no knives, but you may search us if you want.
Mallow signaled one of the other guards to come forward and cover them, while he knelt and patted down their legs and arms.
Go ahead, war leader. The Moon Chief is waiting.
Badgertail's eyes widened. He had been inside the temple before, 10 cycles ago, but he had forgotten the magnificence of the place. A dim hall stretched 50 hands in front of them, lined by doors that diminished in size, drawing the eye inevitably to the huge room at the end, where dozens of firebowls gleamed. Badgertail's gaze lingered on the bright symbols running the length of the hall, the stylized images of eagle, father, son, and serpent, the odd concentric squares painted in black and encircled by rings of white eyes. Intricately carved stands dotted the way, topped by bird-headed effigy bowls and beautiful offerings such as exotic necklaces and bracelets. Badgertail might have forgotten the majesty, but he had not forgotten the tingle of power that filled Nightshade's temple. He shook his head. Theron had been an idiot to cast her out of Cahokia. Of course, River Mounds had accepted her with open arms. Nightshade's reputation spanned half of the world, but he wondered how she had ever learned to live without her tortoise bundle. Old Marmot claimed that after Nightshade left, he had barely been able to use its power at all. It was as though the spirit of the bundle had retreated, or had died from grief. The bundle still graced the main altar in the Great Sun Chamber, but Badgertail rarely heard anyone mention it these days.
Come. We haven't much time.
As Badgertail walked, his thoughts went to Nightshade. He hadn't seen her in 10 cycles, and the last time there had been so much hatred in her eyes that he'd been unable to gaze at her directly. She must have passed 24 summers now, and her power had increased with each one.
I've never felt power like this. Not even in our own great temple.
Our temple does not have Nightshade, brother.
Not yet. Not until we've gutted Genos completely.
Badgertail could sense her here, everywhere. Her presence throbbed as they neared the inner chamber. He bowed to the 6 sacred persons again before stepping over the threshold.
You're a bold man, Leader Badgertail.
Badgertail saw no drummer, The drummer must live in one of the adjacent chambers. He let his gaze drift. Fireballs radiated outward from the central altar like sunbeams, 12 in all. The altar rose 4 hands high and spread 20 hands in diameter. 3 steps led up to the altar and the sacred pedestal. Carved from the trunk of a long-dead cypress tree, the pedestal's brilliant red, purple, and yellow concentric circles formed a halo around the pink face of Nightshade's spirit helper. Just gazing at that twisted face left Badgertail uneasy. The pungent fragrance of columbine seed mixed with sweet flag plant wandered up from the incense bowls on the altar, where Genos stood, his arms crossed over the pedestal.
Not bold, cousin. Obedient.
Obedient to Tharon? Then you're a fool. Look at the catastrophe the boy chief has already wrought. I've heard that the babies at Hickory Mounds are starving. Doesn't that bother your soul, Badgertail? How many villages have you attacked in the past 2 moons? 3? Or is it 4 now? How long does the Sun Chief think he can keep forcing our people to feed his before we rise up against him? We would give the tribute if we could. We can't.
Gino stood barely 10 hands tall, but he had the distinctive triangular countenance of all of the Sunborn. His face had been tattooed in a black band that reached from ear to ear, and his high cheekbones bore black crescent moons. He had pinned his shoulder-length gray hair on top of his head in a bun and adorned it with copper pins and the drooping feathers of a tan and white owl, the sort that lived in holes in the ground. A palm-sized shell gorget hung around his neck, blazing against the background of his golden robe. Badgertail walked forward through the flickering glow cast by the firebowls. He noted that Bobcat remained by the door, guarding the main entry. Badgertail would watch the tiny portal that broke the wall near the point of the northernmost sunbeam. He knelt before the altar, paying homage, then rose and pinioned Genos with his gaze.
Where is Nightshade, Moon Chief? We've orders to take her back with us to Cahokia.
What? Why?
Old Marmot is dead. The Sun Chief needs a new priestess. He wants Nightshade.
He would strip us not only of our food, but of our power! What kind of monster has he become? We've all heard the stories about Marmot and Tharon's wife. They say he killed them, you know, for finding out something forbidden. Hulin, priest at Spiral Mounds, claims that Tharon is to blame for Mother Earth turning against us. He says that Tharon has committed some terrible sacrilege, and that Marmot and Singwa found out about it.
Badgertail looked away. He'd had no idea the rumors had spread so quickly. There had been no marks on the corpses, but all had been staring wide-eyed when they were found, as though terrified by whatever specter had wrought their death. Badgertail's breathing went shallow when he recalled that terrible night. Moon Maiden had shrieked at the murders and ordered the 6 sacred persons to unleash the winds. Thatched roofs on hundreds of houses had been ripped off. Their fragments had tumbled through the village, lumbering like beasts and piled against the bases of the mounds. And each victim had been starborn. Members of the religious elite, who tended the temple and presided over critical ceremonials. Nearly the entire hierarchy had been killed.
Where is Nightshade, Moon Chief?
She's not here. She's gone away for a few days. Her lover, Bulrush, was killed in an accident 7 days ago. Thunderbird sent a bolt of lightning to strike the tree beneath which Bulrush slept. It fell on top of him. Nightshade, she needs time to mourn.
Badgertail bowed his head. He remembered Bulrush. Fun-loving, always playing practical jokes. No one could believe he had taken up with Nightshade. But they had been together for 10 cycles now.
Time is something none of us have. Especially you, Moon Chief. Will you turn over the tribute, or force me to take it from your storage huts?
Gino slammed his fist into the sacred pedestal.
We have another moon of winter left. Without that corn, my people will go hungry. We're in the midst of the starving time, you know that. We've hunted out all the animals for days of travel in every direction.
There are almost no fish left in the Father Water. I can't turn our corn over to you. I beg you, Badger Tail, please. Go back and tell Tharon we cannot do as he commands. If he would just give us another season, we would pay him twice the tribute he demands.
I'm sorry, but Tharon has grown tired of your insolence. You have about one finger of time left. What is your choice? War or peace?
Badger Tail, do you realize what will happen to us if you attack? It's not just the tribute. After you're finished tearing river mounds apart, killing our warriors, we'll be completely vulnerable to attack from anyone who wants what little we have left. The independent chiefdoms south of the confluence of Moon River have become more daring. Rumors of your raids travel on wings faster than swallows. If any of those chiefs should become bold, we're no more than a month's travel away. You'll doom every man, woman, and child in this village.
It's not my decision, Moon Chief. If it were... What is it, Bobcat?
People. Six of them. They just ducked under the hanging. They're coming.
Badger Tail glared at Genos. A small, bitter smile curled those thin lips.
What is this, Moon Chief? You would betray your promise of safety?
You've left me no choice, Badger Tail. We are a desperate people. In a few moments, I will take you to the gate platform, and you can signal your warriors to call off the attack. Then I want you to summon one of your warriors and order him to take my plea for more time to Tharon.
Tharon won't listen, and within 2 days, my warriors will figure out the sham and attack you anyway. You've nothing to gain by taking us hostage.
Time, Badger Tail. Time. Perhaps in 2 days I can sneak out the mothers and children. Maybe the elderly. Then, well, your warriors may do what they will. We will fight you until we are all dead.
He lifted a hand and moved it futilely. The fire had gone out in his dark eyes.
We will die anyway. You take our food and our source of power. Better quickly than a lingering death that eats our souls with its pain.
Genos lifted his gaze expectantly to the doorway. Badger Tail prepared himself. Bobcat had flattened himself against the wall by the entry. His chest heaved with anxious breaths as he nodded to Badger Tail. Then his glance touched on Genos. They had warred together too long for Badger Tail to miss his brother's meaning. He waited until the first enemy warrior came through the door.
Go!
When Bobcat swung a fist brutally into the man's throat, Badger Tail dove for the floor, crawling frantically for Genos. Genos vaulted off the altar and sprinted for the tiny door in the northern wall. Badger Tail caught sight of Bobcat whirling to knee a man in the stomach before two warriors jumped him.
Moon Chief, stop!
No! No! Badger Tail, have you lost your human soul? Let me go!
Bobcat screamed in agony. Desperate, Badger Tail grabbed Genos' throat.
Tell your warriors to stop. Now, or you're dead. Do you hear me?
Two men slammed into Badger Tail, propelling him off Genos. He struggled wildly, grabbing red tatters of clothing, gouging with his fingers until he got an opening. He kneed one of his opponents in the groin, then delivered a fatal kick to his temple. Badger Tail was grabbed by the hair and jerked backward. He recognized Mallow's burning eyes. They struggled, kicking, rolling over and over. When they reached the edge of the raised altar, Badger Tail gripped Mallow by the shoulders and shoved him over the short drop. He landed a knee in Mallow's face, pulverizing his nose. Badger Tail clenched his fists together and hammered Mallow's skull again and again until the warrior stopped flailing. He reared back, preparing to thrust his fist into Mallow's vulnerable throat, but his arms went weak. Across the room, Bobcat writhed weakly in a pool of blood. A blazing golden light glimmered from the copper shaft of the lance that pierced Bobcat's stomach, pinioning him to the dirt floor. Two warriors stood over him, grinning, their lances poised for thrusting.
Bobcat!
Badger Tail lunged away from Mallow, racing across the floor.
Get away or I'll kill you!
The sharp point of a lance sank into his right forearm. A haze of arms and legs flashed around him. Then he vaguely glimpsed one of the men pull his club and felt the first blow strike low on his spine. Before he knew what was happening, he collapsed, landing hard on the floor. The warrior beat him unmercifully. Badgertail writhed, trying to shield his head with his arms. When he struggled to twist sideways to get away, a stunning blow landed at the base of his skull.
No! Don't kill him! We need him!
Nightshade smoothed her hands over Bulrush's muscular back, reveling in the corded sinew, gently touching each well-known scar. His hand crept slowly down her bare side, massaging enticingly. She laced her fingers behind his neck and pulled his face down to stare into the warm depths of his dark eyes. He smiled. Inexplicably, she longed to sob into the curtain of his hair as it tumbled around her face.
Bulrush, I'm frightened.
Shh, don't be. I'm here. Do you feel me?
He traced a finger down the smooth line of her jaw and pressed his mouth against hers, kissing her with all of the passion she knew so well. His tongue explored, moving over hers, thrusting deeper. Nightshade wrapped her arms forcefully around his back and crushed his tall body against her. Fear lay behind her hurry, as if some monster lurked, waiting to pounce on them. Bands of golden light shot through the hut, falling over her thick blankets and dancing in the long feathers of black hair that spread in a halo around her beautiful face. Nightshade opened her legs and felt Bulrush there. Nightshade felt her soul being pulled up through layers of sleep and became aware that a wash of sunlight shone greenish gold against her closed lids.
No!
She fought, struggling to force herself back into the dream, back into Bulrush's arms. But the light grew more brilliant, and Bulrush slipped away into the haunted shadows of her soul. Nightshade's heart pounded sickeningly. She opened her eyes and peered at the blurry patches of Father Sun's light, visible through the rents in the rounded dome of her hut. She had erected a pole frame and then woven handfuls of red hay into the lattice for protection against the elements. But she had been so weary from despair that she'd done a poor job.
Thank you, Winter Boy, for holding back the snow and rain while I've lain here sleeping 20 hours a day.
Her breath misted in front of her. At the foot of her bed, her painted power bundle and water jar sat silhouetted in the shadows. A few tufts of grass spiked from the wall above them, ready to fall at the first gust of wind.
How long have I been here? 6 days?
Her thoughts rambled over the sunrises and sunsets she'd witnessed.
Yes, 6. A sacred number. A healing number. Bulrush should have arrived at the land of the ancestors by now.
Nightshade imagined him there, laughing, talking to all of the precious relatives who had gone before him.
6. A healing number. Why don't I feel healed?
Grief tightened like eagle's talons around her chest, crushing the life from her. The pain had only grown worse. Her soul screamed. The pathetic sound wound down and around through the recesses of her memories of Bulrush, seeking comfort there. And sometimes she found it, in his loving voice, his wry laugh, the joy in his smile. The scream would fade to a dull whimper for a time, until her body overrode her soul and tried to wake. Then it would rise again, swelling to a wail as it fled through the recesses, searching, searching for him. Every morning when she drifted at the edge of sleep, she felt the warmth radiating from his body, heard his heart beating slightly out of rhythm with hers, as she had thousands of mornings in the past 10 cycles. Then she would reach out to touch him and awaken, startled, to find him missing. For the briefest moment, she would think that he must have gone out to catch fish for breakfast. Then the terrible knowledge would return, and she would realize anew that his body lay beneath 10 feet of earth in one of the ridgetop mounds at the edge of the village.
Don't Don't think about it. Children playing.
She tried to force her soul to swim into the sounds to locate their source. But with Bulrush's death, her powers had withdrawn into the darkness of despair. She sensed nothing beyond her own anguish. She rolled to her side and fiddled aimlessly with the dry grass of her bedding. Memories fluttered, unbidden, agonizing. She had seen 14 summers when she'd met Bulrush. It was just after Theron had banished her from Cahokia. Bulrush had cared nothing of her reputation or of her abilities to dive into the well of the ancestors and pierce the layers of illusion spun by First Woman to guard the cave of the tree. He'd just cared about her. For a few cycles, happiness had breathed from every rock and tree. Nightshade tugged the worn softness of her blanket up around her throat. Her heartbeat had slowed to a dull jolting against her ribs.
Why didn't you foresee his death, Nightshade? Why didn't Brother Mudhead warn you?
She had gone over and over the question, trying to understand why Mudhead had abandoned her. She'd even tried diving into the well to ask him face to face, but she hadn't been able to get through the gate. First Woman had barred the entry to her, and she didn't know why. For the past 5 cycles, it had become ever harder to gain entry. Mudhead had told her in a dream what she had done to deserve such punishment.
Humans have thrown the world out of balance. Nothing will be as it was.
But she hadn't understood at the time. Perhaps now. It had been 6 days. She braced her arms to sit up. Her muscles burned as though set afire by grief. She pulled the warm blanket around her shoulders to fend off Dawn's chill breath. She'd been sleeping in her red dress and deerhide boots for so long that they seemed a part of her, like thick folds of aged skin.
Oh.
Wearily, she crawled across the soft, grass-covered floor to grasp the Mudhead power bundle. Sinking back, she held it protectively to her breast while she traced the blue spiral of Moon Maiden with her fingertip and followed it through the 4 concentric circles of father-son to the fat bodies of the hero twins, one white, the other black, one of light, the other of darkness. In the beginning of the world, they had led humans up through a hole in the ground to this lush home and taught them how to live in harmony with the land. Her hand edged down to the contorted face of Brother Mudhead.
First Woman, hear me, I am calling, calling. I wear the colors of the serpent of the sky. Open the gate, I am calling, calling. I would fall into the underworld to speak with you. First Woman, help me, I am calling, calling. Birdman, open the gate of the well.
Nightshade reverently kissed the Mudhead bundle and unlaced the leather ties. Father Sun had risen higher. His rays no longer struck her in the face. They penetrated the lodge in 1,000 places, streaming down to speckle her tangled hair like copper dust. She cautiously pulled a small basket and a black bowl from the bundle. She set them gently on the floor before kissing the bundle again, then setting it aside.
I am coming, First Woman. Help me, help me, help me.
She picked up the basket, surveyed its faded red swirls, and removed the woven lid. A gray smudge of powder smeared the bottom. Nightshade offered a small, silent prayer of thanks to Sister Datura. Traders brought the precious seeds up from islands and the great salt water far to the southeast. The seeds cost a fortune, but 2 of her bowls could purchase enough of them to last her a lifetime. She reached for her water jar and splashed a meager amount of water into the powdered seeds, then half-filled her black well pot. The damp morning air felt sharp in her lungs. Nightshade forced her soul into calm patterns before she dipped her finger into the gray paste in her power basket and began massaging it into her temples.
I am coming, Birdman. Help
Help me, help me, help me.
When she let her hand fall to pick up her well pot, a gust of wind teased her long hair. Not until the breeze had wandered through her dwelling and scampered away did Nightshade dare turn her eyes into the water in the well pot. Her reflection transfixed her. Midnight snarls of hair framed her face, accentuating the purple circles around her eyes. Her full lips and turned-up nose looked pinched, as though she battled to keep something locked inside that bronze prison of skin. As she stared into the water, she felt Sister Datura seeping into her bones, catching hold of her soul with a granite hand to shake her fears out, or to kill her because of them.
I am coming, sister. Help me, help me, help me.
Nightshade shuddered when the sickness started. Her soul reeled as she began the dance of death with her sister. They twined souls like lovers, rocking, fighting, delighting and terrifying each other as they danced over the deadly gate that led to the Well of the Ancestors. Nightshade pirouetted carefully over that bottomless pit, following Datura's lead through the darkness. When the nausea swelled, Nightshade battled it. At last, her soul cut loose from her body. She felt it spiral out through her navel and ooze into the well pot like wispy threads of azure light.
I am coming, Mudhead. I am coming. Bulrush, can you hear me?
Sister Datura released her hold, and Nightshade melted into the water. Her reflection wavered around her, cool and caressing. She could look upward at her own face, though it appeared blurred through the water, and downward. Down, down through the gate, into the brilliant darkness of the Well of the Ancestors. She prepared herself and dove, scattering the colors of her reflection like leaves in warm autumn winds.